CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, behind the black with Bob Zimmerman, and we're headed to French Guiana, the European Space Agency, and a very important cargo, a launch date. Bob, the Webb telescope. Last we talked, it was the 24th, within hours. What's happened?
All right. Well, so the James Webb Space Telescope, 10 years behind schedule, the 20 times over budget, was scheduled for a Christmas Eve launch. The European Space Agency and Ariane Space has now announced, due to adverse weather conditions in French Guiana, they're delaying the launch to Christmas Day. I've heard some people say they didn't want to hit Santa as he was delivering presents, but that maybe, who knows. Either way, it's now set for December 25th, Christmas Day. And I think the only thing holding it up right now, at least as far as Ariane Space is concerned and the European Space Agency, is weather concerns. Keep your fingers crossed, John. My particular post on this story, I have a video that NASA put together showing the 30-day deployment process of Webb. And once it's launched, it's a very complicated deployment process. It's a big telescope. Keep your fingers crossed. I must add, once again, you can see lots of news reports saying this is a replacement or a successor to Hubble. That is a lie. NASA pushed this lie for years. It is not. It is an infrared telescope. It is not optical.
And we're looking for its success because we can learn a deal even though it's not optical. We go now to one of the successes of these last years, which is to understand exoplanets. In this case, I don't know if they have a name for a free-floating exoplanet. Have they come up with one yet, Bob?
Oh, well, you know, scientists, they always come up with acronyms, which are totally useless. They call these what's the exact term they use, which is, like, useless? They call these FFPs. Isn't that elegant, John? They're free-floating planets. But anyway, so astronomers using a variety of techniques as well as going through archival data think they have identified, and I'm qualifying this, think they've identified anywhere from 70 to 170 free-floating exoplanets. These are planets not associated with any stars within the upper Scorpius Association, which is one of the nearest star-forming regions in the Milky Way. These are all Jupiter-sized planets. If this discovery is confirmed, it more than doubles the number of known free-floating planets. It does imply that there's a lot more of them than they had originally thought. But you have to understand there's a lot of uncertainty with this discovery. The announcement was very vague about some points, such as how exactly, using the data they have, and I looked at this to see, and they didn't tell me, how they actually knew the mass of these objects. I'm not sure that I know how they did that. But either way, it's an interesting discovery because it does suggest that there are objects out there that are not associated with stars, and there might be a lot of them. And that, in a sense, doesn't surprise me. We've already seen interstellar objects move through our solar system. Once our detection abilities improve, and I can't wait till we have lots of optical space telescopes in orbit or in space, we're going to find more of these. I have no doubt about it. Some we might find very close.
And Bob, cool. It reminds me of the plot of When Worlds Collide. You know, free-floating planets. They move a little faster than my understanding of free-floating planets, but we could be running into them any time in the next, say, million years of free-floating.
Oh, yeah, this is the interesting, well, million, billion. The point here is that there are more things in heaven and earth that you and I can imagine.
If you haven't seen When Worlds Collide, it's worth a look. It's a remarkable movie, given that when it was made, not being able to really be determined what it would be like in space, but two rogue planets, FFPs, right, Bob? Two FFPs.
Yeah, well, yeah.
One destroys the Earth and the other one becomes the new Earth. Now, finally, Bob, you have images of Mars in the Gale crater.
Yes, this is, you know, once again, so Curiosity has moved up into the mountainous regions, and so the navigation camera took a panorama, a series of images looking ahead. And so I turned that into a panorama, and I really advise people, if they're going to go look at it, click on the panorama, because that's a low-resolution version, and look at the high-resolution version, and start on the left and pan across to the right looking. And what it'll tell you is that this is not Earth. This is a barren, rocky alien planet. It's truly amazing. And I did this, I'm doing this a lot because every day Curiosity's seeing really interesting things. And it's also not boring, flat terrain, which is generally what landers and rovers have shown us in the past. It is now inside mountainous terrain, and so the views are interesting. The other thing about the view that was interesting is looking, and I have this annotated with a red dotted line, where Curiosity is going to head. And if you look at the high-resolution image and zoom in on it as much as you can, that the path that Curiosity is going to climb out of the notch it's in right now is rocky and rough. And I'm not sure that the Curiosity's wheels can handle it. And so that's going to be an interesting, it's going to be really interesting to see how they deal with exiting from this mountainous valley that they're presently in.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. I'm John Madden.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.